And we are live for the 161st episode of the Bronx Bomber Battle podcast presented to you by Six Pack Coverage. I'm your host, Matt Lozaluigi. And tonight, it's Andrew, G, and I. Boys, how are you doing?
Spring training is upon us.
That's it. It took a little while. I was like, what's going on here? But yeah, spring is in the air, guys.
You said episode 161? It's a good number, Yankee Land.
161, what, good vibes, good numbers. I mean, look.
Don't say the word vibes. Don't
look. This is we're changing our name to the Vibes Podcast. It's all about vibes. We don't look at numbers. We don't watch games. We just focus on vibes. But I do have to say, especially compared to other spring trainings where, you know, maybe there's a talk of an injury or who's got hurt or who, you know, wasn't 100%, who had to have an off-season surgery. So far, and obviously it's, you know, the first week of spring training, but so far most of the storylines are positive, right? It's guys being happy to be Yankees. It's Stanton looking in the best shape of his career, right? It's, you know, Verdugo looking like the weirdest human being of all time without his beard. But overall, it's positive energy around Yankee camp. And, you know,
do I have to be a wet blanket already?
And I'm going to let Andrew be a wet blanket already, but I do want to say, personally, as someone who has been very down on this organization and team in general for the past few years, I have started, you know, just seeing the news, just looking at the picks, seeing all the matchups, right? Nestor striking out Soto 3 times. We lost the trade already. It's official. I got to say, it feels good right now. Right now. Right now. But I'm going to let Andrew be a wet blanket.
Well, you said there's no bad news, there's no injuries, and I'd be remiss if we didn't mention that within like 36 hours of the team reporting to Tampa, we found out that Jose Trevino has, I think, a groin strain or a calf strain or something. He's going to be like 3 weeks behind. So I know catcher, what he brings defensively is huge, but that's not what you want from your starting catcher. And it's the weakest position on the roster anyway. People are going to say they want Wells starting anyway, so maybe it's a non-issue. The bigger hit was Scott Efros, who's coming back from Tommy John surgery, had back surgery in, what was it, December. He's not going to be back till like July. So one guy who we thought we were going to be able to slot back into the bullpen, after letting guys like Wandy Peralta leave, we don't have Efros. Now, the good news is there are a bunch of really up-and-coming arms like Nick Birdie, Cody Poteet we can talk about, right? Like, maybe they'll surprise this year. And then obviously the big one that came out in the last two, I think it was today's, what, Wednesday? I think it was Monday. Maybe it was yesterday. But the whole Judge Toe thing, and we talked about this last year. The season's not going anywhere. They're not making the playoffs. Stop holding out hope that he can grind through it. We can make a miracle run, and then we'll worry about in the offseason. And they said, not that it's a big issue per se, but the quote was that it's something he's going to have to manage the rest
of his career. Constant maintenance throughout his career. See,
makes me wonder, would surgery have fixed that?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If he would have said throughout the year, I'd be like, all right, well, why didn't you have the surgery? But he said career, so I'm like, okay, this kind of seems like just something that
– chronic injury, but again, would early surgery when he was 31 have remediated that the rest of his career? I don't know. I don't have these answers, but you wonder.
You wonder. But over, I do want
to
say
it's hard to say, but I'm not going to get too broken up about that. Like, if he said it was the rest of his career, like, I don't know. Word choice might be a thing. Like, if you really fuck up your,
I think he may have worded that
knee or ankle or whatever or something, like, it's technically something you might have to be aware of for the rest of your career, like, even if you don't say it, right? Like, you might not do certain exercises or whatever because it's more stress on your knee on any one given workout. Like, it's, I don't know. I'm not super worried about it. Like, he was still a tank when he was healthy, quote unquote, healthy and playing. So,
just amputate the toe. Simple as that. Shouldn't be an issue. But yeah, I do think that he might have just worded that a bit poor. Like, oh, it's going to take count. And I think anything that Judge is going to say pertaining to an injury, it's just always going to freak us out. So, that definitely wasn't the greatest quote, you know, the greatest sentence you wanted to hear from Judge, but yeah, I'm not too worried about that. But obviously, you know, the star of spring training, Soto, right? Not going to care about him striking out and his first time seeing live pitching in 3-4 months, right? And even though even though I did see some tweets that people were freaking out, but that's Twitter in general. But guys, let's talk about how skinny Giancarlo Stanton looks, because at first when I heard, like, at first I saw tweets saying like, oh wow, Stanton looks way skinnier, and I'm like, all right, you know, I think people are just saying this, but he definitely looks like he got, you know, lost probably 15-20 pounds or and really slimmed down. And it's something, I mean, shit, how many years on this podcast have we said Stanton needs to stop focusing on just getting so big and lifting weights and all these stuff and just slim down, get in baseball shape. And, you know, you heard the quotes of him basically saying that, you know, he didn't exactly say it, but, you know, he was upset at what Cashman said about how it was part of Stanton's game that he got hurt, right? And obviously, probably not what you want to be saying about one of your players if you're Cashman, but you really couldn't blame him because it was a factual statement. And I think Stanton knew, even though he got mad, I think he knew that. And I mean, Stanton could say all, because the story with Stanton has always been, he says all the right things, right? And people have like loved him for that. But at a certain point, that doesn't matter, right? It's like, you could say all the right things, and then April 13th, you're on the, you know, 60-day IL with like a pulled quad or whatever. So it sounds good. It's like, it's good that Stanton's coming. It's good that Stanton came into camp looking skinny. Maybe he's making changes in his workout. He's stretching more. He's doing like yoga or something. I don't know. But it's tough to expect anything different from Stanton. You know, it's like, I'm still going to expect 100 games, 200 average, and 20 to 30 home runs from him, right? That's just kind of where I'm at with them. And if you people that expect anything more than that are just getting their hopes up. And we'll go in a little more later in the show. We'll talk about expectations, especially for some of the acquisitions that the Yankees got this offseason, how, you know, some people may need to lower them a bit. Like, I think, Andrew, you said before the show that there was someone that people are expecting, like, a guy like Verdugo to get, you know, 40, 50 doubles on the year. You know, things like that are just not realistic. Could that happen? Absolutely. I mean, Verdugo's shown pop. He's shown he's a good hitter. But like we say, it's like expectations or things that can happen versus things that probably will happen, right? There's a big difference. And
I think a lot of our fans, and to their credit, those who are, let's say, like 26 and younger, right, kind of at the point where probably a little too young to fully appreciate 2009, and certainly not old enough to remember the dynasty years, right? Like, they've been indoctrinated into, oh, the Yankees are class, high-end organization. The Yankees always win. The Yankees are always there. And they haven't really, to their credit, seen a full-fledged championship in their lifetime, or at least at an age where they can appreciate it. And I think part of that is them getting carried away with it, right? We had the luxury of seeing the team when they were really good, then fall to the depths of like 2013, 2014, right? And then rally back again. Obviously, as you get a little older, you become a little more jaded. I'm definitely more cynical than I was when I was like 15, for sure. But I don't know. It's hard for me to look at every little guy and on the roster and get my hopes up and set sky high expectations. Luigi, you were talking in the pre-show. People saw Marcus Stroman throw his first outing, and they're like, oh, I love this guy. I'm super bad. Like, weren't you just shit-talking him as soon as we signed him? The thing with Verdugo is weird. Gleyber Torres is always going to be an enigma like that. Like, he had the amazing 2019, but aided by a juiced ball. And to his credit, he did have the second, maybe third best year of his career last year, but you don't really know what you're going to get with him because he's an inconsistent guy. It's hard as fans. We need to really take a step back and have actual proper plan. Like, thank God we're not working, you know, like in finance and building budgets for the year, because they'd be wrong. We'd be losing money line to the shareholders every year because we don't know how to set those proper expectations.
Yeah, I think the Stanton thing, I don't know, like, coming into the spring, I think this year, like, obviously we had a reason to be excited because they had Soto, where last year they didn't really do much of anything. So that's, like, helped it along. And all the other stuff, right? You hear, like, oh, DJ LeMahieu apparently looks fantastic, and Anthony Rizzo has been healthy for 3 months or 6 months or whatever it's been. Like, all these various things that otherwise kind of cover up the fact that it's, like, pretty much the same team with Juan Soto and Marcus Stroman. Stanton, and if Doogie. I would say for... Yeah, okay, cool.
I hate the nickname Doogie.
Like, Stan, I would say that
New Boy and Nestor Cortez getting the Brett Gardner treatment. And also Trent Gresham, which he'll you're gonna mispronounce Grisham roughly 8,500 times.
Jermaine Gresham. And it's maybe 50-50 at this point. I just need someone to prove to me that Nestor Cortez is good. Okay, that's all that I'm asking. Stanton, I would say that if it's not going to happen now, it's just not going to happen. He's 34 years old or whatever it is. Like, he has said nothing but the right things, and that's all well and good and wonderful. He can still hit a ball and just absolutely tattoo it. Like, that's all cool. Like, but, you know, he's definitely gotten a lot bigger over the last couple of years. Like, the thing that Michael Kay, like, you know, and lots of other folks like to say, like, before he came to the Yankees the last year, he had 59 home runs. He was in, like, the 70th percentile of sprint speed. Now he's, like, less than 10% percentile.
I think last year, like, was 4, right?
Yeah, something like that. Like, and you could see there was a photo, like, last year, this year comparison, because he said, obviously, he slimmed down. In the pictures, you can all see it. He definitely looks a little thinner all around. Like, you could say by that angle that we saw on Twitter, like, his legs last year were just, like, gigantic, and they're a little slimmer looking with, you know, lots of lower leg injuries. Some other changes. He said there were swing changes. It looks like maybe his arms are closer to his body and maybe more tucked in, stuff like that. But he definitely looks slimmer. And so, like, different physique, change up your, you know, body composition, all that stuff, swing changes. I'm like, look, if it's not going to happen now with all this various stuff, it's probably just not going to happen. Right. And we're going to eat the next 4 years of $98 million and just deal with it. But there's, let's say, more optimism, more reason to be hopeful or optimistic about it now than maybe the last 2 years, because he has made, like, meaningful, noticeable changes, and all we can do is, you know, at this point, hope.
When you could, like, see a significant change, right? When you could, like, look at a guy and say, wow, like, he looks way skinnier, that takes a lot, especially for a guy at that age and that point of his career. You know, a lot of guys aren't going to go through a major body transformation, you know, 12 years into their career. That shows he cares. That shows he's putting an effort in. So you got to give him that. But yeah, I mean, about the sprint speed, about how, like, I mean, the pinnacle, like, the climax of that last year.
When, by the way,
I think it was in the summer. I forget what team it was, but when he was, like, running home and he was out by, like, you know, 20 feet.
Oh yeah,
it literally looked like, you know, one of our
plate.
It literally looked like one of our dads. He told, like, you know, one of, like, a middle-aged dad who, like, you know, hadn't, like, played a sport in 20 years, like, hey, go run around the bases at Yankee Stadium. Like, I think that's how they would look, like, running, like, almost like, you know, you look like you're in, like, a speed walking competition. It was, like, awful. And it got to a point where it's, like, we all knew Stanton was slow, right? We all knew that it's, like, yeah, okay, so, but, like, that really just put into perspective where you're, like, whoa. Like, when it comes to, like, you know, that was, like, national, like, a highlight, like, not top 10, like, everything. And you kind of, it just really puts you into perspective, like, damn, like, this dude, like, barely could run. Like, how, and, like,
for his career,
he did not even be able to run. Like, that was, like, I think he probably even at that point said, like, all right, like, I'm embarrassed by that. Like, I can't, I'm so stiff.
He got
I'm
a lot
so
of flack for that one.
Like, but then that begs the question with his slim down this year, and we've seen it very visibly in his legs and his thighs and his ass, right? Like, is he going to be able to run faster because of that? Because he doesn't have to worry about blowing out
have to imagine he's a little faster. I'd have to imagine he goes to at least, like, a 6% time.
So is it was part of his speed last year because he knew if he went any harder he would injure himself, so he was nursing it? Or is that literally what his cap is? And then to that end, right, you take it the other direction. If he literally has a higher end, is he even going to push for that speed anyway, and he's going to take the slim down body to his advantage and just use that as a way to mitigate more injuries, right? Like, he still will hit the ball scorching hard. You need the batting average to come up. But again, maybe the sprint speed doesn't get any better. And the fact that he's in better shape, per se, just keeps him on the field more.
Yeah.
I think so. I really don't know. Aaron Boone, there was some, it's like him and Aaron Boone had discussions. Like people have said, like, oh, he's not a good DH. He always hits better when he plays the field. And I was kind of just wondering, I was like, man, he's like, for his career, he's a good outfielder, but now he's just so slow. Like, it's not even the fact that, like, oh, right field is small or left field is whatever, Yankee Stadium. He's just not fast. Like, and I think it was really easy for people to be like, oh, he's such like an intense injury risk when you put him out there. Like, he just can't field. Like, he was so slow. And I think, I mean, look, regardless of if he ever is going to acknowledge it or not, like, he was definitely pissed off, and he definitely used the Cashman quotes as motivation. Everyone does when someone talks shit about them. But they did say, like, Aaron Boone or, you know, some discussion between the two said, like, the outfield has to be an option, and especially this year where, like, they're going to want to get Judge DH days, and they're going to probably want to get Soto DH days, and they're going to need to get Stanton his fair amount of DH days. But, like, you can't just be like, oh, Stanton's our DH for 135 games. Like, he needs to be able to play the outfield.
Like I said, I think based on if the fact that losing all that weight, if he is a bit more flexible, like a little less stiff, like I said, there's no way he could be in the fourth percentile.
I mean, no, he's carrying. I think that was a direct result. He's going to be at least a little faster, I think.
Right. I think that was a direct result of just him, you know, overworking himself with weights or his workout, whatever the case was. But
I'm hoping it's like the reverse CC Sabathia, where CC got uncomfortable because he lost weight, and that's not what he was used to. Like,
well, he started pitching better.
Stanton got so large that he was just kind of out of whack, where, like, he wasn't, I mean, he was always like, he had huge biceps or whatever. Like, he was in Miami the first X years of his career, but he just was slimmer. He was just absolutely fucking crushing the ball.
Yeah, and look, the numbers pop off the page for a reason. He's was gigantic. He still is, right? It's more looked like in his lower body that he slimmed down. I'm sure his arms and everything else up there is still pretty big, but going off 2023, average exit velocity, 96th percentile, barrel percentage, 94th percentile. The barrel percentage is interesting, because the guy hit, what was it, like 185, 189 or something like that. Hard hit percentage, 86th percentile. Everything else is pretty much 50% or below outside of that. You would think that he'd be more comfortable in the box. He'd have better range to get to balls and not just kind of stiff lumberjacking the bat. I don't want to set too high expectations, and I did have to even temper myself just like an hour ago. I was watching the MLB top 100 right now, right? And we'll get to it, but obviously top 10 for both Soto and Judge. And I was thinking to myself, like, wow, Yankees have Soto and Judge and Stanton all in the same lineup. And then I had to be like, wait, you know what Stanton is though. Like, so throw that away. It's not these guys all at the peak of their powers, because then that's a ridiculous lineup, but like, you're not going to get that with Stanton anymore. But the question
that's
is
why I really
said, wait.
Like, we saw someone posted the thing about, like, oh, look at this potential Yankees lineup, and it had Stanton batting seventh. And I was like, man, one, Aaron Boone, the player's manager, like, won't do that right away. I don't think he's still going to show the man his respect as, like, a MVP caliber player and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's come up in our group chats, and I really, really would love for, like, Soto or Judge to, like, bat behind that man, because even for, like, a short stretch of time, be like, hey, here's protection, here's an MVP batting behind you, they're gonna throw you fastballs, like, or whatever it is, like, you know, something like that, where we could see.
Yeah, it's probably gonna be Verdugo hitting behind him. The Yankees pretty much flatly said it's gonna be LeMahieu 1, Soto 2, Judge 3, and then if you keep the lefty righty, I would put Rizzo clean up. And then either Torres or Stanton at 5.
No, I was about to say, I think they'll put Stanton 5, Verdugo 6, Torres 7. That's kind of like your anchor down
Which
in
is,
like the bottom.
People
are going to
be mad about, like, Glaber. I mean,
Glaber's a great
how
seven
good he was
hitter
last year. But again, and everyone looks like, oh, he was our second best hitter. It's like, that's not saying much. I don't mean to take away from what Glaber Torres did. He was an above average hitter, certainly. In his credit, he was the best house in a bad neighborhood, or the second best house in a bad neighborhood last year. But because he was our second best hitter, that's an indictment on the other seven guys other than Aaron Judge in the lineup. That's not so much so that he was beating the doors down.
Look, Glaber fits the mold of, hey, if he, like we've said, if he's like your first or second best hitter, like, that's not good. But if he's like your fourth, fifth, or sixth best hitter, that's pretty good. Like, Gleyber batting seventh, that's awesome. Right?
He wasn't Gleyber's like a very carrying the Yankees to wins on his own last year. It's like the team was bad, so it's not like, oh, how dare he not do that? But like, it's like, oh, Gleyber is our best hitter. It's like, yeah, he's a complimentary player, and it's kind of funny because he said on a couple different occasions, like very publicly, like I want to be here, and I'm definitely open to signing a contract and stuff like that. And it's like kind of awkward because the Yankees at this point doesn't seem like they've shown much. You know,
he did say he wants to be a Yankee indication. And look, with like as we've said, paying, you know, 20 plus mil a year for Gleyber in a long term contract, and you don't know about that. But look, if he's a guy that you could get on a good deal for under 20 mil a year, and he's going to be a guy that kind of just anchors like the middle to bottom of your lineup, like he's a like we said last year, him being the second best hitter behind Judge was a huge problem. Right, because he had a very good year and he was an above average hitter last year, but he can't be your second best hitter. So
yeah, would I pay it, whatever the it is, the reasonable amount? Sure, but like, not if it, you know, we said today, not if it prevents you from keeping Soto or pursuing other stuff like that. Like, because he has to hit like he did last year because he's a terrible base runner and he's not a good fielder either. Like, he needs to hit like that.
Well, like we said, look, it's going to be a very like interesting year, especially offensively, because there's just a lot of guys that, you know, have a lot to prove. Gleyber, Zonikind, like, you know, a lot of guys are just this year. So, you know, they're on a contract year. Gleyber, Soto, this is a huge year for a lot of guys. So, and I have confidence though that Gleyber at the bottom of the lineup, kind of like I said, anchoring that bottom of the lineup, being the leader down there, I think he'll do well there. Because
I love him in that 6-7 area.
It's the Yankees, it's Aaron Boone. There's gonna be 20 different lineup combinations by the middle of May. Right? Like where they could say, oh, this is gonna be the lineup. I mean, you know, who knows who gets hurt, who knows who goes in a slump, who knows who's hitting out of their mind.
They're gonna rotate
the lineup constantly. Like
DJ LeMay, who's gonna be back in the leadoff spot on opening day.
I mean, look, the lineup on opening day could be completely different that next game, right? Like it's
probably will
that,
be.
Like that's just what, you know, and I don't necessarily blame them for that because you do have a lot of new parts. So hey, if you want to mess, like I know they always mess around with the lineup, but we've wishful thinking, but. It would be awesome if they shuffled the lineup around the first couple months, really, and then by June they said, okay, this is the lineup, right? And then if a guy gets hurt, you slot someone else in, obviously, but it would be nice if they established an everyday go-to lineup.
Man, I've been hoping for that literally since, yeah, like 2013.
I know.
They just don't do that anymore.
They don't do that, I know.
Well, and, yeah, so the days of 2009, right? Damon leadoff, Jeter 2, Teixeira 3. A-Rod 4, Matsui 5, Posada 6, Cano, like whatever it was, right? Swisher, and then Cano, I don't know.
Cano was definitely
a big part of that is you need at least one switch hitter in the middle of it, and they don't really make them anymore. Now, technically, Jason Dominguez is, and he's going to be out until July. So a couple years down the road, if he develops and is a middle of the order hitter for us as a switch hitter, it gives you a lot of flexibility to either come up with a firm lineup every night and it gives you a little more matchup proofness because he can hit both ways, or you can play around with where he hits because he can hit from both sides of the plate, depending on who's on the mound. You're not going to see that anymore. And the Rays started it way before anyone else. And I don't want to keep being like, well, we're following what the Rays do because everyone does it now, but you have to play different lineups every night. Players don't, outside of the Atlanta Braves and the Texas Rangers, you don't see players play 158 or more games a year anymore. Even if they are healthy, right, they'll still get more maintenance days. It's just the way it is these days in baseball.
Judge did it.
Yeah, you're right, Andrew. I hate to say it, but you are right. But let's talk about something else. Blake Snell is still not signed to a team. And seen a lot of smoke on Twitter, you know, all the fake insiders coming out saying, oh, well, I've heard in my sources, Blake Snell's a Yankee, 3 years, well, 5 years. I don't know. Could the Yankees get him? Could the Yankees sign him? Yeah, but I don't know, guys. I feel pretty good with Cole, Rodon, Stroman, Nestor, and Schmidt going into the year. Now, am I in love with that rotation? No. But, and I don't know. Something tells me Snell wouldn't be good than last year. Something tells me Snell just like obviously he's been great. He won the Cy Young last year, but I don't know. I just don't know if that's just like a huge, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I just don't know if that's a huge, like, slam dunk. And, you know, he's going to want a lot of money, obviously. And you want to talk about preventing you from getting Soto in the offseason. I mean, signing the NL Cy Young winner, I mean, I think that's kind of a, you know, major deterrent in getting Soto. So I don't know. I just, and, you know, the season starts in a month. He's still not signed. Could it happen? Yeah. Do I want it to happen? I don't know. I'm kind of indifferent. What about you guys?
I'm right with you there. You put him in at maybe the three, maybe the two, depending on how you feel about Rodon bouncing back. And you have a stout rotation. Now they all have to pitch at the top of their game. And we've seen with Snell, this is what, his second Cy Young, right? Didn't he win one with Tampa Bay in 2018, I want to say? So he's won one in both leagues. And he's a guy who doesn't really have control problems, but he does walk because he pitches intentionally on the edge, and sometimes batters don't swing the bat. He had trouble going past five or six innings last year, again, because he's pitching to hit the exact location and racking up strikeouts, not because he couldn't get guys out, obviously. I feel like where the Yankees are right now is that you already have three horses, so to speak, in your rotation. You have the upside of what Cortez was in 2022. You have Schmidt, who you hope continues to develop, and then you have the kids, Warren and Beter and whoever else. But my biggest concern, and you already said it, Luigi, is if they sign Blake Snell, it's either going to be on a long-term deal, so like 6, 7, 8 years is what he's asking for, at a palatable AAV, or what they're kind of pushing for is the higher AAV shorter-term deal, so 2, 3, or 4 years. But in either case, I think it definitely hamstrings you in your pursuit of bringing back Juan Soto. Again, everyone's going to say it. They're the Yankees. They have the money. Yes, you're right, but the Yankees also operate with a budget. And remember, I don't want to defend the way they spend their money, but a lot of other owners have outside businesses outside of Major League Baseball. The Steinbrenner's business is the New York Yankees. And we can pull up, I think they just released the Forbes top, whatever it was, 40 most valuable all franchises. So they did, you know, a mix of all four of the big four sports. The Yankees obviously have the money there, right? We can go into their operating income, which is the actual profit for the year. And I don't think that they're sitting on $100 million in profits every year. So it's not like they could just push the payroll to $350,000 or $400,000. Now, could they make it work? Maybe, but we know they never will. So just saying, oh, sign everyone. Oh, they'll make it work. Oh, we can pay Soto $50, $55 million a year. Like, it's not all going to work. In your head, yeah, I'd like to believe that the Yankees, richest baseball team in the history of the sport, they could just assume all these contracts, right? Go for it. Go for broke. You're the Yankees. Throw in that fuck you money.
I mean, like the Dodgers.
They're not gonna do that, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it doesn't scream like slam dunk to me. Like, if he falls into their laps at like an incredibly reasonable, like, it's at some point, you know, maybe there's shit going on where the teams just don't want to play ball with Scott Boras. Like, I don't know. Just given the way that, like, the, like, at least a third of the owners in the sport, like, clearly do not want to spend money. Like, you can't. Every free agent can't sign the biggest contract in the sport every single year. Like, there's just not enough owners willing to spend money like that in this sport right now. And for the Yankees specifically, like, we can all be mad about it. It's just the reality. They budget themselves. It is what it is. They still spend 200 and whatever million, $300 million damn near every single year, and it could be a lot worse as Yankee fans. That's not an excuse. It's just the truth. If he falls into their laps, I would do it. Again, caveat, it can't prevent you from getting Soto. I have no idea what kind of terms he's going to possibly want, but they could be insane. But, like, because of what Andrew said, the control, he doesn't usually pitch deep into games, all that kind of stuff. Like, he's a good pitcher, but, like, is he, like, would I feel comfortable paying him basically what they paid Gerrit Cole, knowing what Gerrit Cole is, comparing them? Like, not for very long. Like, and, you know, certainly, like, if they don't do something now, they could always, they're always looking to add. If someone, you know, comes along in the trade market, then that's cool too. Like, I would definitely feel a lot better if they got someone 3 months earlier, but, you know, I mean, there's not no hope, right? Rodon lost a bunch of weight. He's throwing harder than he did last spring. Stroman seems like he's mentally in a pretty good place. Nestor is healthy.
Good vibes.
The vibes are good. Clark Schmidt is there, all right. He sure is.
Clark Schmidt looks like a tech bro, New York finance bro.
you know, there's not like no reason for hope. I just, you know, like if he falls into the lap, straight 1 year deal or 2 year deal, whatever it may be, then sure, like definitely bring him on because he's a Cy Young winner. But like, I just am not super enthused by the idea.
Yeah, but look, like to your point. And this has been Cashman's MO for going on 5-6 years now, I think. He's going to wait for the trade deadline. Like, right now, you don't know who's available, right? Like, we know Oakland, for example, is going to be bad. They're always bad, right? Paul Blackburn's not that great, but what if he has a great year this year and he becomes available in June or July? Like, that could be a guy that they may go after, right?
One of Cashman's patented trades with Oakland where the
terrible. But, you know, there's also been smoke about Miami looking to move pitching, right? You have Cabrera, and obviously you have Jesus Luzardo, who's the big fish. That's probably going to cost a little more. And the time to trade Glaber there is probably past because he has 1 year or less once the season starts with control. Plus, if you trade him, you don't – at this point, you don't get the qualifying offer. So that's less leverage for the team that acquires him. But, look, there's been names like Dylan Cease. There's been Shane Bieber, which – he had a down year. I like the idea of reuniting him with Matt Blake. I don't even know if Mike Clevinger has signed yet either. Again, he pitched in Cleveland with Matt Blake. And then, of course, the big name that did get moved was Corbin Burns. Everyone made a big stink that the Yankees didn't trade Spencer Jones because prospect hugging thing. But again, he's the only blue chip prospect left in the system. And you can't pick up another Scott Boras rental in addition to Juan Soto and have to negotiate with all these guys next winter. Like, unless and you're sure that Corbin Burns is this year, you can't do that trade.
The way the Brewers handled that was bullshit, too. So, it's like...
Yeah.
What always seems... I mean, it's going to sound like, oh, Yankee fans were so put upon, right? Because our team spends a bunch of money every year. But, like, to have the story come out after he gets traded for, like, a few, whatever, decent... apparently decent prospects to the Orioles, and when it comes out, it's like, yeah, the Brewers wanted the Yankees' number one prospect. Like, man, what the fuck? You know, I don't know the equivalency of the players, the systems, or anything like that. Like, what's that?
Well, we see it every time a big player is traded and the Yankees are involved. How many times did you hear, I don't even remember the name of players of the last few years.
Dominguez
and Peraza and whoever else when they were at the top of the system, and then they end up taking another team's third and seventh and 14th best prospect. It's like, I get you, like the Yankees' third, fourth, and 17th prospects might not be up to the caliber as another organization, but their top end one is certainly better than there, and it's just not apples to apples, and they always just go top shelf. And again, like, I forget who was in our chat mentioned it over the summer, but I wonder if a lot of other GMs are sick and tired of dealing with Cashman because he kind of plays hardball with them. So they say, oh, you know what, give me your best guy. You're not going to actually give me a deal I want. So I'm going to go top shelf. If you say no, I'm going to move on.
I forget what reporter it was, but basically it was, the premise was Cashman has been sticking his nose up at everyone else for so many years. And people finally said, like, you know what? Fuck this guy. Like, we're not going to deal with you. Yeah. Well, give us your best prospect.
I mean,
you know, as shitty as that is, you know, when
Cashman definitely has a lane that he stays in. He finally did the Juan Soto trade, and that's like the big fish, the blue chip, right? Like, he hasn't done that in a little while. He went out and got Gerrit Cole in the free agent. You know, he didn't give up much of anything for Stanton. Chapman, like, they were all really good players when he got him, but he wasn't paying top dollar for a lot of those guys. Like, I don't know. It just seems like kind of fucking bullshit. Like, the Orioles, I mean, for every two teams that make a trade, obviously there's 28 other teams that don't. And so it's always really, it's always the Yankees fans' first thing to be like, oh, well, why the fuck didn't Cashman go get this guy? Where, like, the story always comes out. It's like, yeah, Cashman was trying to get him, or at least was in on him, or made the call. But, like, that's just not the kind of currency he likes to spend, primarily. It took Juan Soto, right? 25 or whatever year old stud, World Series winning, blue chip, incredibly great player, like, to give up top dollar. So, like, yeah, it's not what he does. It is, I just also think it's kind of bullshit that the Brewers would ask for that and then accept what they took from the Orioles.
Yeah, that's the way she goes. But, guys, let's wrap the show up here with MLB Network. Actually, I mean, literally as we were recording, they kind of revealed their top 100 players of this season. Now, I always hate how they combine position players and pitchers. That's like one of my biggest pet peeves. You know, you can't compare those two players. They literally do two different things. But anyways, I'll go ahead and read off the top 10. So before, I mean, the fact that, and Andrew, you pointed this out, and it's incredible. The Yankees had three guys in the top 100. They also had three guys in the top 10, right? Gerrit Cole, Juan Soto, and Aaron Judge, all in the top 10, but literally no one else from 11 to 100. And that's crazy. It really is crazy. And you look at the list, and it's not even like, it's like, wow, like there should have been a Yankee on here. I'm looking through these names in the 90s and 80s. I'm saying, yeah.
Like, those guys are better than Rizzo and Stanton.
Like Anthony Rizzo and Stanton and LeMahieu, right, et cetera, on and on and on. And like guys,
it's just crazy because when they did their top 10 starting pitchers last year, I'm pretty sure they had.
I don't think Cole was on there, was he?
Cole was three or four, and Rodon there was
one.
There
was one top 10 starting pitcher list that Cole either was not on or was like ninth or 10th. And it was obviously he wins the Cy Young, but yeah. So, anyways, the top 10 for this year, Julio Rodriguez at number 10, Gerrit Cole, our guy, at number 9, Yordan Alvarez, number 8, Juan Soto, number 7, Corey Seager, number 6, Freddie Freeman, number 5, Shohei Ohtani, number 4, Aaron Judge, number 3, Mookie Betts, number 2, and Ronald Acuna, number 1. So, I get putting Acuna there because he won MVP, but I still think Betts is better than him, like, overall. But, you know, obviously, got to give Acuna his respect. Judge 3 kind of surprised me a bit. Obviously, he missed some time last year, but I thought maybe
I think it helped
Ohtani. Yeah, it helped Ohtani.
And that bumps everyone down.
Right. But, yeah, like I said, that's just kind of
a little surprise.
Out of me was there was just no Yankees from 11 to 9 because you knew that Cole, Stanton, and Judge would understand. You knew that Cole, Soto, and Judge would be on there. But, yeah, like you really
even a guy
make
like
an argument for anyone else. Like maybe I thought Glaber would be in like the 90s, you know, who would like just sneak in there. But yeah, it just kind of shows how top heavy this roster is. We have, you know, we have a guy who's two MVP caliber hitters. Right? I mean, three if you include Stan has one MVP, but two MVP caliber hitters and a Cy Young, the reigning Cy Young pitcher. And yeah, it just shows you need a top. We saw with the Padres last year. Everyone thought, wow, look at this team. Look at these, you know, Bogarts. Look at these top four guys. The rest of the roster matters. And that's what a lot of people kind of have to put into consideration, especially with this Yankee team. And looking at that top 100 list kind of reminds you that, hey, this team is very reliant on three players. And
well,
that's
the Yankees' credit, the last decade, they've also been really stout in the bullpen, and those guys are never going to break through. I think Edwin Diaz was on there, like number 80, and then maybe one other closer was on the list, but like.
Well, that's why I always say those, I kind of like hate those lists, but when they combine pitchers and, you know, you used to have like, all right, top this 50 position players, top 50 starting pitchers, top 25 bullpen arms. Like it's all these guys do different things and have different roles. You can't compare a bullpen player to a center fielder. So. Yeah. Or just like when in the football, they, you know, they'll have like defensive players with quarterbacks and everything. It's like, dude, how can you compare like who's a better QB or who is he a better linebacker or whatever? It just doesn't make sense. So, but bottom line, like I said, as a Yankee fan looking at that list, it reminds you that this team is very top heavy and we love Judge. We love Cole and it's going to be fun watching Soto in Yankee Stadium, hopefully hitting a lot of balls out to the short porch, but it's definitely still a concern with the rest of the roster, with guys like Verdugo, with guys like Rizzo, DJ, Glaber, who, you know, what you're getting out of the outfield until, you know, Dominguez get back. Can, you know, Grisham or whoever, who's, you know, there's a lot of questions.
There's lots of, I don't know.
But not as many questions as last year. You know, because a guy like Soto could be in the biggest slump of his career and still have a 400 OBP, right?
Like, he's just that type of hitter. Terribly good for the first, like, month, you know, or two of last season, and he still fit up really great numbers at the end of the day. Like, who was it? Someone said today, they're like, his eye at the plate is just, like, incredible.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Soto shuffle, baby. But, guys, any final thoughts before we sign off tonight?
You guys been as intrigued by this whole Fanatics jersey situation as I am?
Honestly,
don't have names in the back of their jerseys that doesn't really affect us.
Yeah,
so.
That's a good point. But yeah, that have you seen like how the pants look? Like the guy, you could like see their jersey through the pants, like it.
The fact that they were more customizable allegedly in the past and they're not, I can totally see, because pitchers, it matters a lot more, right? As opposed to a second baseman who sits there most of the time and has to make a stretch every once in a while. The one thing actually that stood out to me the most was the coloration they said was off. So like Cubby blue and Dodger blue, there's like an actual palette, like a digital number that's like, you put that in a computer and you spit it out.
Yeah.
How do you fuck that up? It's not like you're trying to mix it in with like watercolor paint, right?
Yeah, like basically like in Photoshop, like if you could look up you could look up like Google Yankee Blue Photoshop code and it would tell you like EEFF0050. So, because what people were doing is like the tweet that went viral was they were sending pictures of like, you know, an MLB player would take a picture of his new jersey in the locker. And they would send it to Fanatics and say, hey, there's something wrong with my jersey. And the Fanatics support would say, oh, yeah, you're right. We're going to look into that. And it was like the actual MLB player's jersey. It wasn't their jersey that the fan bought. So, like, it's just not, like, I don't know how you fuck that up that badly. Yeah, but, yeah.
I was a little
bad.
First of all, Fanatics has their hand in all, like, basically every sports merchandising, whatever. Yeah. Like, they've been making the jerseys for a couple of years. And initially I was like, oh, Fanatics, like I've heard quality kind of issues just from like a fan purchasing
perspective.
The Fanatics
branded stuff isn't the best, but the jerseys are still Nike jerseys, licensed, right?
Yeah. Like when I,
even hockey, right? Like all the authentic stuff is Adidas. Fanatics has their own cut of stuff, which may be shit quality, but that's their knockoff stuff, and they acknowledge their branded stuff.
Yeah, and so the more I read about it,
swoosh on stuff and not have it be perfect, that's a problem.
Yeah, the more I read about it, I was like, all right, so these seem like they're more design choices by Nike than it is like Fanatics not making them correctly. And I mean, Nike will get it figured out, I'm sure. Like, because it's like, Nike is always trying to make, like, the lightest, the most futuristic, the coolest fabric, the whatever. It's like they changed the breathability of the numbers, like, all shit like that. Like, it's, you know, they released new models of jersey at the All-Star, all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm sure they'll get it figured out, but, like, it's a weird own goal, really.
Yeah, it's definitely been a conundrum, to say the least, seeing all, like,
the one thing I did laugh at, where they were like, I mean, they showed a picture of, like, Shohei Ohtani. Like, you could see, like, the outline of his, like, compression shorts on his pants. And someone commented, and they're like, man, the first rainy day in Seattle is going to cause an international incident. Like,
oh, God. Yeah. Good old Fanatics.
Thank God the Yankees jerseys never change whatsoever.
That's right. The Yankees, they still have the Nike shipment from, like, 2018. They haven't had a change.
Yankees Twitter is still mad about the fact that the Nike logo is on the jersey at all, so.
I know they're not, like, they picked, like, the City Connect teams. I know the Yankees aren't on it this year, but, like, I wonder if they're going to be on it next year.
Pretty sure Hal Steinbrenner, like, actively does not
we'll
want
be
that,
one team.
So.
Yeah, we'll be the one
team. We barely did the Players Weekend ones. Yeah. Even those were hideous.
Just the black jerseys, but. Yeah, I think that'll be it for us tonight. Maybe our next episode will be a Blake Snell signing episode? I don't know. But
I'm not money on that. Yeah, we'll gladly fire it up.
We'll gladly fire it up. But yeah.
Just for the record, Hal Steinbrenner did go on the record about the City Connect in the past, say basically like, I'm not interested. So
old man yells at Cloud. But for Luigi, for G, for Andrew, this was the Bronx Bomber Battle Podcast. And we'll see you guys next time.